Our next story takes us to Portland, Oregon, and a case of a hit and run that happened in 2016.
A young girl, 15 years old, named Fallon Smart, was fatally struck by a speeding driver on Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, which is a major commercial thoroughfare in Southeast Portland.
Shane Dixon Kavanaugh, a reporter at the Oregonian, covered the story and says it was big news in Portland at the time.
Car going about 60 miles an hour killed her sort of on impact, and she died at the scene. And the person behind the wheel of the car was a young Saudi national who was studying here in the Portland area by the name of Abdul Rahman Noura.
In August of 2016, Noura was arrested.
He's charged with first-degree manslaughter. His bail is set at $1 million. Prosecutors here are thinking that he's likely not going to be able to post bail because he's a college student here. And then he manages to make bail. You have to put up $100,000 or 10% of the security here in Oregon to get out of jail. And he's essentially placed on house arrest and allowed to resume taking classes while leading up to his trial. And then in June of 2017, 2 weeks before Noura's trial is set to begin, he just suddenly disappears.
It was a tip from local law enforcement that made Kavanaugh look more closely at Noura's disappearance and ultimately discover a pattern of behavior on the part of the Saudi government.
A year and a handful of months after Noura had gone missing, I was actually talking with a law enforcement source about another matter, and the Noura case came up, and he mentions to me that, oh, by the way, did you know that the Saudi government helped Abdul Rahman Noura escape prosecution in the United States? And that was kind of a holy smoke sort of moment. That sounds kind of crazy if it's actually true. After that first tip, we ended up reporting about the Noura case and getting it confirmed by federal law enforcement that they believe that 2 weeks before his trial, a black SUV comes and picks up Abdul Rahman Noura near his home in Southeast Portland. He's driven out to East Portland to a nearby sand and gravel yard where he cuts an ankle monitor that he's wearing and tosses it. And then federal law enforcement believes that Noura at some point was able to likely get on a private plane and get out of the country, and that he was likely given an illicit passport by the Saudi government because he had turned over his passport as a condition of his release from jail after he was first released and facing manslaughter charges.
Is there any effort to bring him back to the United States to face these charges?
One of the issues that makes these particular cases unique is that the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, despite having a longstanding allyship between the two countries, do not share an extradition treaty, which means that if there is a Saudi national who's suspected of a crime here in the U.S. and returns to Saudi Arabia, the Saudi government isn't going to just turn this person over back to the United States to face charges.
How many other cases have you found so far that follow this pattern of Saudi nationals committing crimes and then fleeing to Saudi Arabia?
Within the last few years, there were four other cases that bared a striking resemblance to the case involving Abdul Rahman Noura. All of these cases involved young Saudi nationals, all men, who were students here in Oregon, and they were attending these schools with a scholarship from the Saudi Arabian government. Five of these individuals, and I'm including Noura in that list of five, were charged and accused of pretty serious crimes. Noura was facing first-degree manslaughter charges. We found two rape cases, a case involving a really sort of astonishing trove of child pornography. And there was also another DUI hit and run here in Portland that almost killed a homeless person here back in 2016. In four of the five cases, we found that the Saudi government had posted the bail for these defendants so they could get out of jail while awaiting prosecution. In four of these cases, the same private defense attorney was retained to represent these clients. In a handful of these cases, in three of them, they surrendered their passports to an authority, so they didn't have them when they disappeared. And all of these defendants disappeared before being tried, or in one case, before completing their sentence.
Is it illegal in any way for Saudi Arabia to bring their citizens who are charged with crimes in America back to Saudi Arabia before they can face trial?
It is unusual for a foreign government to post large sums of money to bail their citizens out of jail here in the U.S., at least according to the law enforcement officials and prosecutors we've talked to throughout this investigation. But that's totally legal. It's, of course, completely legal for a foreign government to put the money up to hire legal counsel for their citizens as well here in the U.S. But if a foreign government is then helping these defendants essentially subvert the American criminal justice system and escape prosecution, we're talking about, undermining U.S. sovereignty and quite possibly violating international law as well.
Has the Saudi government responded to any of your reporting so far?
You know, since we've started working on this investigation, we've been trying to reach out to both the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C., and the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles. And we hadn't heard a word from either. And then finally, we got sort of a brief statement by a spokesperson for the Saudi embassy, essentially confirming, one element of our reporting, which is, as a policy, it sounds like Saudi Arabia will post bail for any citizen accused of a crime in the United States who asks for help, and also provide them legal counsel. The Saudi embassy did not respond to detailed questions that we had asked about these individual cases, but did provide a brief statement with regard to the case involving Abdulrahman Nura, where they say they did not provide Nura with any travel document prior to his skipping bail.
And are you going to continue tracking these cases yourself, either in Oregon or around the country?
Yeah, we've been able to follow up on leads that we have gotten from people who have read our work in other parts of the country and have contacted us. So if anybody out there thinks that this may have happened in their community, get in touch with us and we can look into it a little bit more.
Shane Dixon Kavanaugh is a reporter at The Oregonian. Shane, thank you for bringing us your reporting.
Thanks so much.
Senator Ron Wyden is the senior Democratic senator from the state. He doesn't live far from where Saudi national Abdulrahman Nura allegedly struck and killed Fallon Smart. And he says it was Shane Dixon Kavanaugh's reporting on this pattern of behavior by the Saudi government that got his attention.
What I think really galvanized a new focus on this was the effort by the Oregonian newspaper at the end of the year, which essentially reported that credible government officials said that they believed that the Saudi government was involved in whisking away these criminal suspects.
In response, Senator Wyden, alongside fellow Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, introduced two pieces of legislation late last month, the Escape of Saudi Nationals Act and the Preserving American Justice Act, aimed to stop foreign consulates from helping their citizens escape the U.S. judicial system. But when I sat down with Senator Wyden, he says the response from federal agencies has been slow.
Here we are, 6 weeks later, and administration officials like the Secretary of State won't answer a single question or say a single word about this troubling pattern 6 weeks in.
And you've followed up with the State Department and the Justice Department on this?
That's correct. We have been after the Justice Department, the FBI, the State Department, Customs and Border Patrol, because what we want to know are really two matters. What evidence do these key government departments have with respect to the Saudi government helping its citizens flee American justice? And then second, what are they doing about it? Mm-hmm. For example, in the second letter to the Secretary of State, I made the point that I believe the Secretary of State ought to bring in the Saudi ambassador and demand to know what the Saudi government knows about this and what the Saudi government is doing to bring these criminal suspects back to Oregon to face justice.
What do you think it says about the American judicial system that there's this apparent loophole in which a powerful ally can help someone skirt justice like this?
It raises very substantial questions, in my mind, about whether the Trump administration simply believes that the rule of law does not apply to Saudi Arabia, and particularly coming after the barbaric murder of Jamal Khashoggi, you have to ask yourself whether the Saudi government understands that it is unacceptable to whisk criminal suspects out of Oregon or anywhere else in the United States.
Secretary of State Pompeo, whom you mentioned earlier, he's been a key figure in the aftermath of the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and in terms of interacting with the Saudi government. Do you think Pompeo is just in general being too soft on Saudi Arabia?
Well, let's put it this way. I also serve on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence.
Yep.
And I'm not going to get into anything classified. But I think when you look at the public statements, I mean, I asked a question with respect to the unanimous finding of the Senate as to Mr. Khashoggi, and Gina Haspel wouldn't answer it in an open session of the Intelligence Committee. My concern is that this administration has sent a whole host of signals that they are willing, and I'm not going to speculate on motives, they're willing to basically say that the rule of law doesn't apply to the Saudis.
What about other countries? What do you know about the extent other foreign governments may be acting in this way? Does it extend beyond Saudi Arabia?
I think that's probably something that I ought to pass on as a result of my ethical obligations. But that's our whole theory, is we want to know, for example, whether there are other foreign governments that help their citizens evade justice. So what I want to make clear, and I've made it clear, you know, to the family, is I am not going to give this up. The focus of Senator Merkley's, you know, legislation is to try to collect the data about how widespread the practice is, what governments are involved. What I've tried to focus on is to try to up the ante in terms of tough consequences for the governments and their leaders. I'm the ranking Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee. What we have proposed, for example, are very substantial tax penalties, because we have jurisdiction over a tax law which could affect sovereign, you know, wealth funds and could certainly allow for tough penalties against other high-ranking Saudi officials.
Is part of the issue that there is no extradition treaty with Saudi Arabia? Is that something you're looking at too?
Yes. I mean, clearly that is one of the limits, and that's why I'm going to be looking at a variety of approaches to ensure there's some consequences. Here's what it comes down to. And I'm going heading home in a few days, and I'm sure it's going to come up. Oregonians feel that we're basically dealing with a medieval government that is very interested in flouting modern diplomatic norms. That's why I introduced legislation to bar Saudi Arabia's leaders from the United States until the government returns suspects who fled. And we send a very strong message through the tax law with major tax penalties on governments and sovereign wealth funds from a country that helps its citizens escape American justice.
Before we let you go, Senator, as you mentioned, you're a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Can you tell us where the committee might be in its investigation into Russian interference in the election?
Well, I don't want to be obstreperous, but that is exactly the kind of subject that we are barred from talking about. But let me just give you my assessment that I can talk about publicly. I still believe there is much work to do on what I believe is the central question, which are the issues surrounding followed the money issues. And I have said this since the very first day we banged the gavel on this. And the reason I've said that is that following the money is essentially counterintelligence 101. If you want to compromise somebody, you compromise them with money. And there's a lot of work that should be done, for example, and it ought to be done in a public hearing on the Moscow Tower, because Michael Cohen has already essentially admitted that he lied, that the efforts with respect to the Moscow Tower, and we've all read the news stories about sure. penthouses and the like, went on well into that kind of run-up to the 2016 election. So I will tell you from my standpoint, there's lots of heavy lifting to do in the Senate Intelligence Committee on follow the money issues, and I believe that a significant portion of that ought to be done in an open hearing.
And lastly, we might know more about all of this stuff through the Mueller report. I imagine you believe that that report needs to be made public.
I would pull out all the stops to make sure that report, and if there are sensitive intelligence matters in it, you can ensure that those are not divulged, that I'd go to the floor of the United States Senate and push very hard to make sure that the truth gets to the American people. On the Judiciary Committee, there's bipartisan effort to promote that, and I'm going to support them as well.
Senator Ron Wyden is a Democratic senator from Oregon. Senator, thank you for coming on. Looking forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for having me.